Well, we always have new listeners. 1-800-289-2646. Thank you, Frank.
All right, Bill. We'll talk to you later.
See you next Thursday for sure, if not in between.
You betcha.
Good night.
Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Second Continental Army of the Republic is recruiting. We're looking for leaders, people with military training and experience, people who are good organizers, who can keep their mouth shut and adhere to the policies of the Second Continental Army of the Republic, who will follow faithfully all legal and lawful orders of the officers appointed above them, who can lead men and who can either train them or find someone who can train them and supervise that someone. And we are serious, ladies and gentlemen. We're also looking for pilots. Pilots with or without planes. If you have planes, any and all types of aircraft. If you fit that description and you are not a convicted felon, self-proclaimed prophet, religious fanatic, reactionary, insane person, or any of the other undesirable traits that are floating around out there, send me a letter with a copy of your resume and a point of contact address and phone number. We are going to be ready for whatever happens, all the while working to try and ensure that nothing happens. But we are going to be responsible in our actions either way. If you want to be a part of all those Americans who are banding together and preparing themselves to preserve and protect liberty and freedom for all peoples. And yes, liberty and freedom are two different distinct things, ladies and gentlemen. Then we're looking for you. If you're already a leader of a militia, we are interested in talking to you. All of you disparate groups out there who have no real command structure, who have no command staff, who have no good leadership or policies, who have no strategic planning, you need to contact us, because we do. And you need to do it as soon as possible, ladies and gentlemen, because time is running out. Time is running out. President Clinton announced on January the 16th his intent to appoint Thomas S. Foley of Spokane, Washington and Washington, D.C. as the chairman and member of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. Former Representative Foley served in the United States House of Representatives from 1965 to 1994 and was Speaker of the House during the 101st, 102nd, 103rd Congress. He served as House Majority Leader of the 103rd Congress, and in that capacity, he was a member of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. He also served as Majority Whip and Chairman of the House Democratic Caucus. Mr. Foley serves on a number of boards of directors, including the Board of Advisors for the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and previously a member of its Board of Directors. Mr. Foley is a partner in the law firm of Aiken, Gump, Strauss, Hauer, and Feld. He is married to the former Heather Strachan. On January 16th, President Clinton also announced his intent to appoint two new member scientists to the Scientific and Policy Advisory Committee of the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. Randall Forsberg of Massachusetts is the founder and director of the Institute for Defense and Disarmament, IDDS, a nonprofit research center in Cambridge, Massachusetts. She authored the paper that launched the Nuclear Weapons Freeze campaign in 1980 and was the recipient of a MacArthur Foundation Fellowship in 1983. Ms. Forsberg has published numerous articles and contributed to or edited many books, including the annual Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, SIPRI, Yearbook of World Armaments and Disarmament, 1968 to 1982, The Price of Defense, 1979, Nuclear Weapons, Report of the United Nations Secretary General, 1980. World Weapon Database, 1986 to 1987. Cutting Conventional Forces, 1989. The Arms Production Dilemma, 1994. Non-Proliferation Primer, 1995. And the Annual IDDS Arms Database. She is an adjunct research fellow at Harvard University and has served on advisory panels for the University of California, Ohio State University, and the University of Notre Dame, as well as the United States Congressional Research Service, the United States General Accounting Office, and the United States Office of Technology Assessment. Patricia McFate of Maryland is currently a senior scientist at the Science Applications International Corporation. Dr. McFate is an expert in the technical issues of national security, particularly arms control, treaty verification, and implementation. She has served as a consultant to the United Nations group of experts on the subject of verification in all its aspects, including the role of the United Nations in verification. In addition, she has served as deputy chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities, 1978 to 1981. As a member of the Strategic Council of the University of Arkansas, and as the Vice Provost of the University of Pennsylvania, the Scientific and Policy Advisory Committee of the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency is responsible for advising the President, the Secretary of State, and the Director of the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency on scientific, technical, and policy matters affecting arms control, nonproliferation, and disarmament. Both Randall Forsberg and Patricia McFate are Marxists. United Nations Secretary General Boutros Ghali proposed on January the 15th imposing an assortment of global fees and taxes for international services and activities to fund the fiscally strapped United Nations. He is proposing global taxation, as dozens of nations, primarily the United States, have failed to meet their obligations to fully fund the organization. The United States already pays over 33% of all of the funds paid into the United Nations, and therefore funds fully one-third of all United Nations operations. When I told you that the United Nations is the United States, I was not joking, ladies and gentlemen. The United Nations was created and formed by the United States. The United Nations sits in New York City. The United Nations has been funded and kept alive by the United States. The military forces for the United Nations are the military forces of the United States. There's a great desire on the part of the United Nations chief, Boutros-Ghali, to free the organization from the vagaries of domestic budget negotiations in the nation's capitals. And he says this, quote, "It is time to seriously address the need for a United Nations that can operate on a secure and steady international financial foundation." He said in a speech at Oxford University yesterday, "Finding the right formula will be a project of vast importance for the future of the international community," end quote. He suggested that United Nations members consider a tax on international air travel, visas, and speculative financial transactions. He also proposed a level on fossil fuels, pollution, and on the more than $1.3 trillion in currency transactions that occur each day worldwide. He also asked countries to consider setting aside a small portion of the savings from downsizing their armies and the elimination of subsidies to protected industries. In the last 5 years, ladies and gentlemen, the United Nations 185 members have made commitments to fund hundreds of billions of dollars worth of future activities in areas as diverse as development, population control, peacekeeping, and environmental protection. But most of the members have been unable to come up with even a small portion of the money needed to fund the United Nations' previous commitments, let alone what they have already said that they will do in the future. And without the money from the United States of America, there would never have been any United Nations, there never could have been a United Nations, and there would not be a United Nations today. Boutros-Ghali said last month that the current financial crisis may have deeper roots than the current budget squabble in Washington. He said the increasing accumulation of wealth in the private sector will have to be tapped to ensure the United Nations' future. Do you know what that means? Globalization, he said at a December 18th news conference, is diminishing the role of the member states. Multinationals are 10 times richer than the majority of member states, and we have to obtain their assistance. And they'll get their assistance because the multinational corporations cannot exist without the international globalization and ideas that constantly flow from the United Nations. The idea of a global tax, ladies and gentlemen, is not new. You see, it was first introduced in the early 1970s by James Tobin, who won the Nobel Prize for Economy. And he wanted to do it to curb stock market speculation. He advocated placing a small tax, folks, on foreign exchange transactions in order to avert market volatility. And I don't know how that's going to avert market volatility if the investment is worth it and they can make the money, they're going to invest it, regardless of a tax. It was dubbed the Tobin tax, but it just sort of slipped by the wayside and disappeared into oblivion. But now that the United Nations is facing a $2.4 billion shortfall, Boutros-Ghali has ordered a feasibility study to be done to consider a United Nations tax on all nations that are members. Now, let me tell you, since we're already funding 33% of the activities of the United Nations and all of their expenditures, don't you think that the American people have already been taxed? You see, the money comes from us. It doesn't come out of some drawer in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. doesn't have any money. It comes from the American people in many, many different ways. You would be amazed at how many hidden taxes you pay on a loaf of bread or on a gallon of gas, are on tires, are on anything that you can imagine. Especially if it has a number of different ingredients that make up the final product. They're all taxed. but most Americans don't even think of that. You see, right now, if you're a taxpayer and you file and pay the unconstitutional, illegal, and unlawful income taxes that you have volunteered to pay, and if you volunteer to pay them, they cease to be unlawful because you have accepted it on your own. And you pay all the other hidden excise taxes, fees, registrations, and what have you. You are paying at least 50% of every penny that you make in some form of taxes. And now, on top of the fact that the American people are paying one-third of all of the monies that is spent by the United Nations, Boutros Boutros-Ghali wants to levy another tax upon the United States of America and its people. I wonder if he did that, if we would have to stop paying the one-third. I think, ladies and gentlemen, the way they're going, and with the anger of the American people, and the willingness of many of us to draw a line at some point, that the United Nations days are numbered. Numbered. Boutros Boutros-Ghali wants to create a flurry of financing initiatives. Now, what do you think that means, folks? Has the United Nations any capability or any method whereby they can make any money whatsoever? In order to propagandize the peoples of the world, everything that they do is free. You see, if it wasn't, they would have a lot more resistance than they even do now. And they would have gone out of existence a long time ago. So when they say that they're putting together feasibility studies to figure out how they can make money, they're not talking about making money. They're talking about taking our money. Now, think for just a couple of moments. If the American people are so upset at the amount and the methods by which taxes are levied against us now, what do you think is going to happen if they are told that they now have to pay a United Nations tax? And will they have to do it? Oh, this is the, you thought that was bad. Well, it's a done deal, ladies and gentlemen. This is a letter of transmittal sent by George Bush from the White House to the United States Senate, and I'm going to read it to you verbatim. Quote, I transmit herewith for the Senate advice and consent to reedification a convention on mutual administrative assistance in tax matters among member states of the Council of Europe and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, done at Strasbourg, January 25th, 1988, and signed by the United States in Paris on June 28th, 1989. I also transmit the report of the Department of State on the convention. Under the convention, parties will exchange information for the assessment, recovery, and enforcement of taxes and tax claims, and to assist in the prosecution of a taxpayer. The United States will exchange information on taxes on income of profits or profits, capital gains, or net wealth imposed by the federal government, and, in keeping with the United States Model Treaty, will not exchange information on state or local taxes. The taxpayer protections available under the convention are at least as extensive as under the United States Model Treaty. Information provided by the United States to another party may not be released to a third party without consent. The convention also provides for assistance in the recovery of taxes for assistance in service of documents. The United States has chosen to reserve on these provisions in accordance with the options available to all signatories. I recommend the Senate give early and favorable consideration to the convention and give its advice and consent to ratification, signed George Bush. How about that? So they've already made an international agreement for cooperation and exchange of information for the assessment, recovery, and enforcement of taxes and tax claims, and to assist in the prosecution of a taxpayer. Doesn't say anything about the United Nations, ladies and gentlemen, but once the United Nations levies a tax, guess what? Guess what? And the first two guesses don't count, for those of you who are a little slow. Don't go away. I've got a lot more.